The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 6 minutes past nine this Wednesday, the 20th of December, 2023. How are you all keeping? I hope you're very well indeed. And you're on board with us, aren't you, for the next 3 hours on the 9 till noon show and throughout the course of the day here on Highland Radio. And we've another interesting show for you today with the nice mix of keeping you up to date with what's happening around the region, around the world, of course. But also, we're going to be visiting another nursing home and we're going to Port na Blaha today. Looking forward to hooking in with the crew there. So you can look forward to some more of the fun we had yesterday and the day before. That's coming up a little later on and so much more besides. So please do not go anywhere. And just to remind you, you can watch the programme as you can every single day, all year round. And it's on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, on Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport. And also on X, and you can also click the Watch Live button on our website and watch in browser. So there's no excuses at all not to be involved, be it on the radio or elsewhere. The papers this morning, the Finn Valley Voice, a new 150 kilowatt charger unveiled in Navanay Car Park by the buffet on Thursday, allows drivers to charge up within a matter of minutes and marks a significant step towards accessibility of sustainable energy solutions for local residents, as well as those travelling to and through County Donegal. There is a couple of charging points already up the top of the town, I suppose you could say, in Stranorlar. I've never seen a car, well, I've seen a car sitting on it once. I've never seen them used very, very often, but I'm sure that more high-powered one will draw more traffic. On to the Inish Times this morning. Guardian and Inishowen are liaising with the PSNI in an attempt to establish if there is a cross-border link to a spate of burglaries across the peninsula over the last 10 days. Four burglaries were reported in Redcastle, Mavillon and Burnfoot on Monday night and Tuesday morning. They followed seven burglaries in the Mavillon and Greencastle areas on December 10th and 11th, which included the ransacking of the sacristy at St. Columbus Church, Ballinacrane. Now, I know, speaking to some people in the area, that everyone is sort of, not everyone, sorry, a lot of people are really quite worried about the situation, quite anxious about it, and are looking for some progress in that investigation, which is really understandable. In the most recent instances, there was a burglary at Clare Redcastle at around 4:45 on Tuesday. The residents in the house heard an intruder. When they went to check around the property, the intruder was gone. A rear window was breached and entry had been gained, and a number of items were disturbed within the house, and a purse containing a bank card had been stolen. And they go on then in the paper to list further the instances. And if you want to hear or watch that, by the way, you can also listen back to Community Guard information from yesterday. It's in our Highland Radio News and Sport Facebook page. The Donegal Post this morning, an experienced Garda has told how he felt like a sitting duck after being trapped and set upon in his patrol car during a terrifying attack in Bundoran. Garda Fiacra O'Hara was set upon by John Martin Ward after he went to answer reports of a public order incident alone. When he arrived at the scene of the call at Supervalue Car Park in the seaside town on the evening of July 21st, 2021, he found a large crowd beside a caravan. He suddenly heard someone shout, "Get the keys," and he was approached by Ward, who's 40. John Martin Ward appeared at Donegal Circuit Court this week after he pleaded pleaded to assault causing harm to Garda O'Hara during the terrifying incident. I'm not sure which way he pleaded, but we can read on in the paper and I'm sure it'll be contained further down within that article. Right, the Irish Times this morning. Census 2022 data released by the CSO yesterday underlines the delicate balance between demographic growth and the Irish language in the Gaeltacht. The latest official figures reveal that the population of the Gaeltacht increased by 7% since 2016, while the numbers of daily Irish speakers continued to fall. Over 6,500 more people were living in the Gaeltacht in April 2022 when the census was carried out, compared with April 2016, bringing the combined Gaeltacht population to more than 106,000 people. Of those living in the Gaeltacht, 65,156 indicated that they could speak Irish, while all eight Gaeltacht areas in the state saw population growth. Just 31% of the Gaeltacht population, or 20,261 people, reported that they speak Irish on a daily basis, representing a 2% fall compared with 2016, 325 fewer people, which is a concern. The proliferation of holiday homes and high property prices have long been the focus of advocates, with many calling for a dedicated housing policy to protect linguistically vulnerable communities in the Gaeltacht. But I would imagine, too, there's quite a few people have decentralised and moved to these areas as well, you know, remote working and what have you. But is it something that can be reversed now at this point? There is a lot of effort with very good people working on the ground trying to promote the use of the Irish language, but it still continues to decline, which is quite, as I say, potentially for some, really quite worrying. On to the Irish Independent now. And new powers for Gardaí will allow suspected drug driving motorists to be detained while officers wait for a drug test result. Drivers suspected of drug driving who've given a sample will be held by Gardaí while a result is being processed under proposals going to Cabinet that will fix an anomaly in the current law. However, plans to increase penalty points for some driving offences committed during bank holiday weekends will be stalled as they need further legal scrutiny. And to be honest with you, when I heard that to begin with, it didn't make a great deal of sense to me, to be honest. I do understand that it can be more dangerous at that time, bank holidays, but maybe there's more traffic. There's a lot of variables there. Anyway, Minister of State at the Department of Transport, Jack Chambers, will publish the updated road traffic bill following Cabinet sign-off, which includes new speed limits and provisions for multi-penalty points to be imposed where more than one offence is committed. An anomaly in current laws will be fixed, which will allow Gardaí to detain drivers once they give a sample for a drug test and await the results, a government source said last night. A busy Cabinet meeting. They're signing off on quite a lot today, it seems. On to the Irish Daily Mail this morning, and I don't think this is going to come as a surprise to many. Applications by Irish healthcare staff to work in Australia have soared by almost 1,000 amid fears the HSE recruitment freeze will only drive that number higher. Figures obtained by the Irish Daily Mail from the Australian Health Practitioner Regulation Agency show that successful applications for the year 2022-23 stand at close to 2,500, up 982 just 12 months earlier. The most recent level of applications represents a 140% rise on the 1,045 applications that were finalised in 2018-19. There are now 8,880 Irish medical professionals registered to work in Australia. That's up 2,204 since 2018-2019. Now, I mean, there's always going to be a level of people qualifying and wanting to see different parts of the world and work in different environments. But the bottom line is that being enticed to Australia and being offered really good packages that make them feel very well rewarded and very well regarded. And until such time as this country has a look at itself and says, well, what are we going to do to try to keep them here? The problem's only going to get worse, because Australia's not the only market, in inverted commas, or the only space that we're losing these workers to. Really quite worrying. On to the Irish Daily Star now. And Micheál Martin, the Tánaiste, has branded suggestions from a Fianna Fáil councillor that the inn is full for asylum seekers as completely unacceptable. Now, if this is a story that vexes you, or maybe some of you are sick listening to it, I'm sorry, but for 2024 nationally, this is going to be the big topic. There's just no doubt about that, because you can see the various political parties, both publicly and internally, nationally and then locally, really trying to figure out where we're at or where they want to be at in this conversation, because there's some very important elections coming up as much as everything else. And you are seeing subtle language changes from people at the top. There's just no doubt about that. But the Fianna Fáil leader stated that the inn was empty and that a hotel in Galway that had been earmarked for 70 international protection applicants should not have been burnt down. Mr. Martin also confirmed that he had spoken to Galway Councillor Noel Thomas regarding his in his full comment, but had not been able to reach Seamus Walsh. A spokesperson for Fianna Fáil said that comments made by party representatives have been referred to the party's Rules and Procedures Committee. Yesterday, Mr. Martin blasted the comments. He didn't agree with it. On to the Sun now this morning, and an interesting story, and maybe If anything might make Prince Andrew sweat, this might be it. Britain's Prince Andrew is braced for a New Year nightmare with the release of more evidence from a grope accuser. Judge Loretta Preska has ruled that material relating to Joanna Schoberg should be unsealed in 14 days. The order was signed on December 18th, meaning they should be made public any time from January 1st onwards unless anyone appeals. The 40 documents should reveal additional details of Ms. Schoberg's encounters with Andrew, which have already put him in a very unflattering light. Now, this fella, Andrew, claims that he's never done anything wrong, but he has paid millions, up to 10 million euro, and been stripped of all his royal titles and duties for something he claims he never, ever did at all. Well, anyway, this lady has claimed he groped her breasts at Jeffrey Epstein's New York mansion in March 2001, when she was 22, and he was playing with a spitting image puppet of himself, a gift from Epstein's lover, Ghislaine Maxwell. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of those documents. An awful lot of murky stuff surrounding Epstein that's been covered up. And the sooner it all comes out, the better. I'm not saying that's it all coming out, but anyway. And the finance minister finally in the mirror this morning. The finance minister held off on introducing a new tax on vaping amid fears it might put off smokers who were using e-cigs to help break their habit. Excuse me. In a pre-budget submission, officials from the Department of Finance said they needed to be a delicate balance to both discouraging young people from vaping while also supporting smokers. The Health Department had advised too that any new tax on e-cig should be ring-fenced for use in tobacco control and to help reduce smoking. Michael McGrath also decided to leave taxes on alcohol untouched despite lobbying from the drinks industry, who wanted to bring Irish rates of duty in line with other EU states. So that detail just been released now quite some time after the budget, but I thought just an interesting one to note. Joined on the programme now by Councillor Michael McClafferty. Good morning, Michael. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, listeners.
I suppose, you know, yesterday we heard from Ungada Síochána of sheep being stole, quite a lot of sheep being stole in the Milford district. And now we're talking about sheep kills by roaming dogs as well, you know, as if farmers haven't enough to be contending with. For those watching, we're going to play out a video. It's not fantastic quality, which is no harm, but it does tell the picture. So what happened? Where did it happen?
Basically, Greg, this sheep kill yesterday, between Monday, darkness of Monday night and daylight Tuesday yesterday morning early, sheep were killed in the balcony, got a Hark area there, which is just outside Fulcair for the people that aren't too sure of where it is. So obviously a farmer got up early in the morning going to tend to his flock of sheep and that. And on arrival, as the video shows then, just he was met then with dead sheep, other sheep highly traumatised. There's four sheep dead at the moment. The other sheep are highly traumatised, and I was speaking to them again early this morning there, and unfortunately the other sheep that are traumatised, they have began starting to abort their lambs there early this morning there, Greg. So as we as farmers all know, this is probably going to be the trend going forward with all these sheep. It's highly possible all of them will abort their lambs, which leads into a very, very distressing situation, obviously, for the farmer, for himself, for his wife, for his family, his kids, witnessing all this yesterday morning, witnessing now this morning again, and the days going forward, what's going to happen. He has a flock of sheep there that are still living, but they're highly traumatised, and it's just unacceptable. And all this is caused because of roaming dogs, Greg, because somebody didn't watch their dogs or somebody's dogs were unattended to and they got away. This should not be happening. I mean, we have spoken about this down through the years. I've spoken about it umpteen times yourselves there in Highland with yourself, with others there. The Gardaí talk about it, the AFA talk about it. Every year it's the same thing, but the message is not hitting home, Greg, with dog owners, to control your dogs, whether that means keeping them in the pen and the kennel tied in a chain, keep them at the house, but wherever they are, keep them under control. If your dog's not at the house momentarily or otherwise, you need to know immediately where your dog is, and you certainly need to be going out looking for him, or if they'd be jumping into the car and start driving about, you find him or her, because if you can't find them and you don't know where they are, there's every possibility your dog is responsible for what happened yesterday morning. Got a Hark, and that's the bottom line. Balfouring, got a Hark, sorry.
And is there a sense in the community that you know, dogs are roaming or are seen roaming, or, I mean, obviously this is happening under the cover of darkness and farmers are waking up to this, but is there a chatter that a lot of dogs do roam around, you can see them, or is it only really the results of their actions that we're seeing in the light of day?
As a result of their actions that we're seeing, Greg, in the light of day, I suppose the other thing I would point out, just countywide, you do see from time to time popping up on Facebook, a dog found here, a dog found there, so on, etc. Fair enough, a dog's been found, somebody's trying to locate the owner, but at the same time, we as farmers would rather possibly, if the owner of the dog had up a dog missing, rather than somebody up or down the road finding a dog and looking for the owner, because if you lost a dog, obviously you know the dog's not there. So the question would be with ourselves in the farming world, why are you not posting looking for your dog? Why is Mary or Johnny or Paddy down the road found a dog somewhere and managed to get a hold of it, and they're putting up there looking for the owner?
Oh, but you'd see a mix of it, but I suppose too, like I would see, I would be sent quite a few, you know, a dog's missing and looking for the public to help. But I suppose the way things are now, especially at this time of year, maybe people are reluctant to put those posts up because if there is a sheep kill, they could get blamed rightly or wrongly. So it's catch 22 maybe for some people. But either way, I think there are a lot of people, a lot of dog owners that don't believe maybe that their dog is capable of this, that maybe they let them out or they're an outside dog in inverted commas, you know, and they're an absolute angel doing during the day. But I think a lot of us can't really comprehend how a dog basically will revert to type, okay? And it comes from, you know, a wild hunting type animal, and it reverts to that, especially if it's with other dogs. And then it'll come back in the morning and just be an absolute angel again.
That's the problem, Greg. This is the thing about it. You could have your dog, my dog or your dog, could be in the house now besides the table. It could be licking the face off us and all play for and everything else. But once it gets to dark, if that dog gets out, gets away, turns into a demon. There actually used to be, Greg, you'll recall, back in the day, some years ago now, you'll recall when we were younger, there used to be an ad on the television. It used to be on RT1 normally every evening, kind of slash, I think it was a cartoon type ad, but it pointed out the point of dogs getting away and killing sheep. We don't see that type of situation anymore. I don't know for why. We don't see those type of ads anymore on the television or social media, so on, etc. And those type of ads need to come back to educate people, to let them see what their dogs can and are responsible of. Regardless, the wee cuddly dog or poodle could be, as I say, could be licking the face off you now, but come night time, dark time, he gets out, he could be a street killer. And you won't know unless some farmer lands at your door possibly and says, look, your dog killed my sheep.
But a lot of the time the farmer doesn't find out who is responsible. And especially coming up to Christmas, it is a business. Farmers, of course, you know, often will raise animals to slaughter, but they do care an awful lot for animals as well. So there is the upset of coming across this scene. There is the expense, the huge potential loss. And then there is the loss of those lambs that sheep will abort when they are traumatised. So, you know, this is a really big hit for the farming family affected by this, both financially and emotionally, just as I say, a couple of days out for Christmas.
Yes, Greg, you're right. In both counts, as I said, they're both financially and emotionally. This bill is going to run to thousands of euro. That's what the reality is here, Greg. Thousands of euro. And the reality is as well, unfortunately, these yokes that have bought their lambs, there's no guarantee that they will come out of this trauma that they're in either, to be fair. That's the other side of it. You know, so the farmers had literally what several thousand euro here immediately, whatever it adds up to going forward when the final tally be done, when we know the extent of the trauma and everything else.
You would wonder, Michael, if one dog would be capable of this. Do you know what I mean? Because, I mean, to take four sheep down and it might turn out that others have been attacked, you know, this took quite some time, very stressful for the sheep, of course. Do you think, from your experience, is it likely to be one dog, were they running in pairs or more?
I would say it's running in pairs or more, Greg, from my experience, and I'll see other farmers out there will share much the same view. It's too much. There's too much damage done here for one dog. We all know it's usually pairs or more, as you say. I've actually some years ago known of four dogs down here doing an attack way back a long time ago.
Yeah.
Four together, like.
Again, which is for people who have a dog on their own, it's just not something maybe they can get their head around. But the bottom line is at any time of year, but particularly this time of year, the dog has to be kept under control. It has to be kept in at night. Now, I'm not saying it has to be kept in the house, but it has to be kept on the property at night. That's just the otherwise. And if the person is found, if the dog is found and the owner is found, that they are liable for this as well. Not to mention that a farmer is perfectly within its right to shoot a dog on its land, and I don't think any dog owner would want that.
That's the reality as well. First of all, if the dogs are found, we assume it's dogs. In this case, we feel that is the case of his dogs. If the dogs are found, the owner is fully liable, and also for any dog at all that enters into farmland, the farmer is entitled. What the law on his side, what in his right, if he happens to have access to a gun, he can shoot that dog on sight, no questions asked. Some people may say that's cruel, but that's the reality of it. But at the same time, we have thousands of euros worth of damage done here this morning. A family suffering a hell of a lot, I can tell you, from knowing them. And, you know, that's the other side of it that people don't get. And for the people as well that may want to make the argument or don't get it, that their lone single dog could not be capable of doing this. The reality is, I always say to those people, well, you think your dog may not, but the problem is when your dog leaves the premises, goes down the road and meets maybe your neighbour's dog or a dog a mile down the road, when the two of them get together, that's where you have the trouble. So you have two single dogs then becoming a dual pair then.
Yeah.
That's where reality kicks in, and that's where the danger is.
You know, I mean, obviously my sympathies with the farming family here, but yes, also general dog owners. The vast majority of dog owners are very responsible, but between issues like this, you know, dog fouling, the small group of people that allow their dogs to run on beaches or in parks without a lead on, it gives... I'm starting to feel that this is becoming a very unfriendly country for dogs, if you know what I mean, or dog ownership. And it's not because of the majority of very responsible dog owners. It is the minority who don't seemingly care or don't get it. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's in all our interests that we sort of moderate this minority's behaviour. So we don't want a place where you can't go anywhere with a dog. You know, we don't want that either.
No, of course not, Greg. And I know, as I say, nobody's going out either with a big stick and looking to tackle anybody or such either because of a dog. But just, again, back to the minority, they need to be responsible and they need to be respectful. But as somebody indicated to me yesterday, unfortunately, the way things are going at the moment, the respect is going out the window in relation to the dogs of some people. And, for example, of walking possibly places with their dog off the lead, maybe terrorising children, terrorising others, maybe down the beach, is happening from time to time. It's happening in Irish Forest Park, it's happening Hornhead, for example, out at the Dunfanaghy Youth Football Park out there. They're going out there with dogs off the lead. The stuff going on, dogs are doing their business then. They're not picking up after the dog. They're messing up the trails. You know, there's no need for this. All these things, first of all, put on a lead. Secondly, take your bag with you. And thirdly, be responsible with your dog. If your dog is a bit hyper or whatever, be conscious of the fact that children are small children.
All year, particularly if I'm walking with a small person, and I'm not talking about Aisling in this situation, I'm talking about Hudson, but even when walking with a small person, you know, you see these dogs come bounding at them, the height of the child, and the smile and joy on the face of the owner, not understanding that it's instilling fear, you know, and I get that, and I'm patient, and I understand it, but you see yourself out and about, that people don't get that not everybody loves their dog like they love it, or not everybody thinks it's just this most beautiful pet in, you know what I mean. But anyway, listen, Michael.
100%.
We must move on. Again, it's a nightmare for this farming family on many levels, financially, emotionally as well. We hope the majority of the sheep can keep their lambs, but we do know that even a dog barking or running up against a fence where sheep are can cause enough distraction or upset. So even if we're walking and the dog's not in a field, we have to be careful that it's not upsetting sheep, because that can be enough for them to abort their lambs as well. But anyway, for now, Councillor Michael McClafferty, thanks for that. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. Any more information along those lines? 086 60 25,000. We mentioned Greg, please, and thank you for dropping by on Sunday afternoon. No problem. It was my pleasure and lovely to see you. The Letterkenny Rotary Club Christmas Tree of Remembrance is open and awaiting on your support down at the Letterkenny Shopping Centre. So feel very free to drop and write your yellow ribbon while supporting St Vincent de Paul Society, No Barriers Foundation and Rotary International Charities with a donation. You can remember someone special in this way with a yellow ribbon, someone who's passed away, someone who's ill, who can't get home for Christmas or for any special intention that you wish. Strictly confidential, and you'll also get a free Christmas card too. The tree will be there right up to Christmas Eve, so your support this year again would be greatly appreciated once more. Okay. The blinding lights, you might have seen them when you're out and about. Some of them, on dips, they would clean the eyes out of your head. Tom's had that experience. He's got a comment on that, and we'll hear it after these. All right, Tom's with us now. Hiya, Tom.
Good morning.
You are, I've noticed, as most motorists have, what seems to be excessively bright lights on cars now. Tom, what's been your experience?
Well, I've just noticed that, certainly within the last month, I didn't seem to notice it before. I might have seen another very bright headlight, but now there's quite a lot of them. And they're quite new to me. Perhaps other people haven't noticed it as much, or it's bothering me more than them. It might them. But they're very bright headlights now, and it's dark now. Today, for instance, shortest day, and tomorrow of the year, it's going to be dark. You need your headlights from about 4 o'clock on. And as they come round the corners to you or straight ahead, there's a very, very bright headlight. And when they're dimmed, they're very bright as well, brighter than they used to be. Other cars on the road, when they're dimmed, you have a yellowish light. And you know, obviously, that it's a dimmed light, but not with these.
I think, too, a lot of the cars now are higher, you know, the sort of SUVs or crossovers or some variation of that. And they seem to have incredibly bright LED lights. And it's a nightmare on full headlights. But even on dips, if you're in a lower vehicle, it is really, really blinding. And we don't really know how big a factor this might be in traffic collisions, you know, after the fact, Tom, which is something I think maybe needs a little bit of investigation, does it?
Well, I would think after an investigation, unfortunately, has more than, it seems to have more than a lot of places, that it would be something taken into account after the event. Well, that's too late. Because when you're travelling on the road, you're just about maybe at the most 4 feet away from, or 1 meter away from the other car coming in the opposite direction. So it's a matter of milliseconds to pass and to avoid this. And I find it very off-putting.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
It's slower to dip.
Yeah. And I think, too, with the modern car, a lot of the cars, the new cars now, have automatic dipping. And I just wonder, are they dipping later than someone might dip them manually? I'm not sure, Tom, if your car has the automatic lights, but I think a lot of people have them on. And it's the car themselves that dips the light rather than the driver. And I just wonder, maybe is the technology dipping them a little later than the manual method?
Well, it seems to be, if you're going to dip your own headlights, you know that there's a car coming because you see the glow of the car, and you just dip it as it comes around that corner or over that height, and you have it done before it comes, and it usually will have too. But these are right beside you before they dip.
They come round the corner and then
some of them don't seem to dip at all.
Yeah, indeed.
Maybe they're relying on the mechanics to do it.
I think that's probably a factor, and I think also too, obviously, the very bright lights. A lot of the lights, there's a couple of cars now, the lights are very, very high up, and also they have a continuous light across the front of the car as well, which I think is takes a little bit of getting used to. But okay, Tom, listen, let's see what other listeners think. Thanks so much for your time this morning. That's Tom. Are you noticing more bright lights, cars late to dip their lights? Is it having an impact on your driving? And so on and so forth. Should dogs, asks a caller, have GP tags on their collars so that owners can find them? Dogs will escape and go for a dander. Lila, my friend's dog, used to do it all the time and visit me and Roxy, which is nice, and that sounds cute and all that, and it is, and it's lovely, and I'm sure the dog got up to no nastiness, but we can't really, I don't know if we can sort of trust them to do the right thing. Okay, let us go to Diana now. Good morning to you, Diana. Thanks so much for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
We were talking about safety ramps outside schools yesterday, and we'll sort of broaden out the conversation, if you wish, Diana, a little bit. Talk to me about your concerns in the at Killigordon National School.
So my name's Diana Keatley-Robb. I'm the principal of Killigordon National School. So, Greg, just to give you a wee bit of context, we're a two-teacher school with 19 pupils. And between full-time and part-time, we would have 6 staff members here, 2 parking spaces and a very small drop-off area. We're actually situated right on the N15 National Primary Road at a major junction with traffic lights. So there can be quite a bit of congestion at pick-up and drop-off times. I suppose our main concern is that most of our families actually travel by car because we serve a lot of rural communities who don't live within the confines of the village itself. We would have families that would travel as far as from Convoy and Rafo, and most of our children travel by car, so it's adding to the congestion at the school gate. And I just feel it's so important to highlight that we have so many schools around the county and indeed the country, and they have similar issues with safety at school gates.
And a lot of the times the school was there before the roads were upgraded or what have you, and we never thought about it properly, did we? We never sort of says, right, what about the safety of students, parents and teachers as well?
Yeah, because funny, I was thinking about that even historically. I mean, I'm here over 20 years and we didn't have the same issue back then. There was fewer cars on the road, but also a lot more kids travelled by bus. And nowadays, it just doesn't seem to be the same profile of our school. And I know that we're trying so hard to get, you know, park and stride and kids to use bikes and scooters. But I still think the infrastructure is just not there, you know, for them to use those, the footpaths and the cycle paths safely. And we don't have those at our school.
And low curbs, doesn't seem to be a great deal of lighting. You know, if we are going to walking and cycling to school, there's no cycle lane. The road's relatively narrow. It doesn't really fit, does it? You know what I mean? We can't have a national policy that simply wouldn't work in a school like yours.
That's it. I'd love a wee bit more joined up thinking just to try and look at the profiles of all schools, because not everyone fits the same bill, I think. And that's kind of where we are. We're kind of stuck in the middle.
And just looking at Google Maps of your school here, just to sort of get a sense as we're speaking, and just by coincidence, as the Google Maps van was passing, you've got a massive green articulated lorry that's just about to go down past the school. It's trying to make the corner there and it's over on the wrong side of the road. And then you've got a massive big, I don't know what weight it would be, flat bed lorry also going past the school with really, really significant traffic. And I see the approach road too. Looks like drivers would be driving really quite fast approaching that school. Look, it's a big, long stretch coming into the town.
It has,
What do you think needs doing, or ideally, if you could, you know, I mean, if the, obviously it, not moving the school or what have you, but in terms of road safety there, what do you think as the principal, Diana, would be the solution, or at least a help?
I think there needs to be just a little bit more awareness of all road users, you know, because I've been speaking to bus drivers, for example, and they obviously need enough space to get their vehicles in. Our parents, like a lot of them, have very small children. So they can't, like a lot of ours have small children and then smaller children with them, you know, that haven't even started school yet. For them to walk, it's a bit difficult. I just feel wider spaces with better vision lines, with very poor vision lines when we're pulling out, and even just better drop-off spaces.
Yeah.
I just feel that the areas that are there could be used a little bit more efficiently.
Yeah, and you don't really see the school until you're up on it either.
I know there is a
sign there, but you don't. Right, okay, stay with us because there are other people sharing these concerns, including James. Hi, James.
Good morning. Nice things.
I'm good. You're also involved with Killigordon National School. What's your experience? What have you got to add?
Well, first of all, yes, I just want to reiterate everything Diana said. She's correct in everything she said. I currently have 3 children that go to the school.
Yeah.
I have 7 children, so I obviously have 4 younger than junior infants. And this has been a concern now for over a year since we started attending the school. And I think the issue is because there's maybe myself and two or three other parents are doing at least three drop-offs to that school at three different points during the day, then road safety is obviously a huge concern. And as you've mentioned already, you're looking at it on Google Maps. Now, I'm there, as I say, three times a day. I'm recording, and I've already spoke to Gary Vee about this. The number of people who are speeding through there, the number of trucks that are racing to beat the lights, the line of vision coming up to the school is non-existent. And I spoke to both the council and the Gardaí back at the end of September on the 29th to raise a concern just as a parent at this point, to say, look, if we can't do nothing about the parking, can you at least do something about the flow of traffic? Mm. Can you monitor the traffic at least around the points where children are going to and from the school? Because it's unacceptable how people are driving past that school. Now, we only have spaces, you probably can see, yeah, for about three cars that can park at any one point. Now, last week I happened to run a few minutes late for school, and I had to back up onto the main road, so I was one of maybe three or four additional cars that were parked facing Killygordon coming from Balbuffet. Right. And cars are still coming up that break quite quickly. They're not seeing you to the last minute, and they're flying around you on the wrong side of the road where cars are coming from, the traffic lights down. So it is a bit of a concern, especially when you have small children. And we, like I say, I raised those concerns just with the Gardaí and the council, and to this point I've had no response. Now, the Gardaí told me that they would send out the traffic division just to do some speed awareness, just to create a visible presence, just to try and slow down cars. But to date, there's been none of that. Now, as you touched on yesterday, you know, with RFO and some of the other schools, they've obviously got all this new work done where there's speed bumps, new lights, and all the new tarmac and pavements. But as Diana said, like myself, I'm coming from RFO every day. We don't have that facility where we can just kind of walk to school with the safety and the high vis. We don't have that. So it's paramount that we look at a better parking infrastructure, a better drop-off point, and certainly more awareness around the school to at least tell people that there's a school there, because our school is set back maybe 20 or 30 feet from the main road itself. And in fact as well, even a basic is we don't have yellow boxes to pull in and out of the school. So if we were coming from Killygordon traffic lights to turn right into the school, we would have to sit there while the traffic's blocked up one side, and then the parents are blocking it up another side, because there's nowhere safe to turn, no way to come in and out of that traffic. So there is a couple of things that need to be addressed, and certainly, hopefully, by bringing it to Highland Radio, that, you know, the council and the guards and whoever else is involved can just look at this and go, yes, we're a small school, but we need that voice. We need that someone just to speak up and just be a little bit more.
I'm kind of conscious that this is sort of Wednesday on Christmas week as well. It is an issue, if nothing happens, that I would really like to return to in the new year as well. Because
Greg,
obviously,
do you know what?
I would like to come back to this if nothing improves.
Absolutely. I would invite you to the school at 9 o'clock and 2 and 3 o'clock, and you can come and see it yourself. Even just standing there, you'll see the amount of drivers that are on their phone. Many of them are just not taking care of going past the school, and it's frightening, because one of these days, because somebody won't do anything, one of these poor children are going to dart out, because there's no safety measures in place really for parking, and one of these kids are going to run out and they're going to get hit, and we don't want that to happen.
God forbid. I know exactly what you're saying, but we have to talk about it. Shelley Gillespie is with us as well. Shelley, good morning.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
I'm okay. We're covering a lot here, but we just want as many voices as possible to emphasise the importance
Absolutely.
Of this to the local area, Shelley. So I presume
Absolutely.
You're echoing a lot of what we've heard from Diane.
Absolutely. Well, first, say, first and foremost, Killygordon National School is a fantastic school.
Yes.
I've been involved with the school now for over 12 years. I've two children that have gone through it. So this wasn't an issue for me when I first started with the school. It wasn't as busy, but I have a daughter now in fifth class. So in a sense, she's street savvy, Greg. She can walk down and watch out for where I am. But as Jamesy said, he has young children, and he also has children sitting in a car that he can't just leave and walk two lanes of traffic across to collect his other children. So this isn't something that's just going to be an overnight, it's going to just be solved. This has to be a community effort with the guards, with the councillors, with road safety. It needs to be a whole, I don't know, multidisciplinary approach to solving this, because this school isn't going anywhere. It's on a main busy road, as Diana says, and it needs to be looked about before something crucially happens, and that's not what we want to happen.
And we also have looked at the reality of driver behaviour, right? Traffic coming from, I presume it's the Ballybuffet side. They'll
Absolutely.
See.
Well, you've got the Ballybuffet side,
but
you've also got the junction heading into Killygordon,
of course.
And there's a lot of lorries there from businesses from the creamery. There's a lot of activity, and you've got people coming in off a main road into this junction, and there isn't that. Yep. We can put up as many signs as we can saying "slow down, children here." But there is, it is an extremely busy junction.
Yeah, and what I was going to say, though, is that it switches from 100 to 50, not very far in front of the school. You can't see the school. And I would say the reality is most drivers keep the foot down until they see that stop sign or the traffic lights. And at that stage, they're up on top of the school. I think that's sort of a basic read of probably your average driver behaviour. And that's really...
You've got it in one, Greg. As well as that, you've got the bus errand... bus stop directly in front of the school. So when people are waiting to get on the bus, that bus has to stop on the main road to let passengers on. Then you've got people then deciding, well, they'll know better than the bus, and they'll try to overtake that. Yeah. All meanwhile, we're trying to get our children safely from the school, and it's just not good enough.
Diane, where do we go from here in terms of, I mean, we'll make representations, of course, and I think it's important too that we hear from local public representatives on this issue. But Dan, I mean, obviously, it's a busy school, it's a popular school, it's very well run. We all know that. But what needs to happen next, do you think, for road safety for everyone involved to be improved? I mean, there has to be some traffic calming measures. As I say, the way the road's laid out, people are going to be going past that school until they see that stop sign or the traffic lights, probably at 60, 70, 80 kilometres per hour.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. And you've really captured, I suppose, our location very well there. There is a programme, the Safe Routes to Schools programme, and it's a great scheme, but it's like everything it seems to be in this country. You have to apply for it. There's paperwork. Not everyone gets included in it. I'd love a wee bit of a multidisciplinary approach, as Shelley mentioned, with the Gardaí and the RSA. Like, they have a programme here. They have safe systems approach towards Vision Zero, where they want, you know, eliminating deaths and serious injuries and road traffic crashes. And one of their priorities is school zones and implementing school zones. Mm-hmm. I would love someone to come out on site and really look at it. And I suppose give us a wee bit of an individualised approach.
Yeah.
Till we see what kind of problem solving we can come up with. Because, again, there is a bus stop outside the school. We want to make sure that all that infrastructure is still available to people in the village. So, like, I do think it's a community approach.
Right. I want to come back to this, as I say, in the new year, if nothing,
that would be
if there's
wonderful,
no advances.
Yeah.
But I think it's just important to get it on the record now. James, thanks for your time. I really appreciate
no
it. Shelley,
you
as well, and Diane, as principal of the school, really appreciate all of your inputs there. Coming up after 10 o'clock, we are going to be going live to Port na Blah, where we'll be hooking up with Tommy and Sinead. And Joe and the team, they are broadcasting live from Hillcrest Nursing Home. They're really looking forward to that. We're going to get another couple of songs from Sinead, and loads more coming up as well. Also, we'll be pausing the lines on our card draw at 11 o'clock because between 11 and 12, we're going to give away €1,000, fingers crossed, on this show. We only have three more of the 1,000 draws to go before the car's given away. It's all very exciting. But if you want to be in... with a chance to win one of those €3,000 prizes or the car, you need to get your tickets before 11. You can give us a call here on 07491 25000. We'll sort you out before 11. Ideally, the website highlandradio.com. Fast, safe and secure there as well. Or indeed, if you're in and around Letterkenny, you can always call in and we will facilitate you. Right, let's take a break for the news and obituary notices. Much more on the way.